the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, I know I say it every week, but another bumper weekend in J1. And, well, incidents up and down the country. This truly was a cracking week to discuss.
Oh, absolutely. I thought we'd seen it all in midweek with that 3-3 between Reds and Marinos. But this weekend was absolutely crazy. There was something in the water across Japan, I thought, especially on Saturday, on the field, off the field, in the stands, outside the ground. It was all a bit manic. And yeah, we've got a lot to get into.
Yeah, late drama. VAR actually coming off looking pretty decent for a change in a number of games up and down the country. And yeah, we'll try and round it all up for you listeners very, very shortly. But yeah, Sam mentioned it last Wednesday. It was indeed a couple of cracking games then, as well as the ACL clubs made up their games in hand from match day 11. I mean, we usually just skim over results from the previous midweek, Sam, but we saw two very contrasting games as Kawasaki went back to the top of the table thanks to Shogo Taniguchi's last gasp header in a 1-0 win away at Kobe. And then we had a game of the season contender at Saitama Stadium as Kasper Junker's second half hat trick saw hosts Urawa erase a 3-0 deficit after Yokohama F. Marinos had scored three times inside the first half hour.
Yeah, it was an absolutely crazy Wednesday, and I was glad that for patrons I only had the two games to wrap up because it would have been quite difficult otherwise. Yeah, there was drama in all of them. Kobe, after their 4-0 win the previous weekend, it looked like maybe they'd turned a corner. They weren't great against Kawasaki, but held them at bay for long periods. But then for them to concede, as they did, almost the last touch of the game was devastating for them. Obviously fantastic for Kawasaki. And then the later game was unbelievable. Like the first half, I thought Urawa were dreadful. And Marinos took a 3-0 lead. They were fantastic. Rio Miyachi just was like the player that Arsenal thought they'd signed before he got injured all those years ago. I thought he was great. Marinos looked terrific. But then for whatever reason, whatever was said at halftime from Ricardo Rodriguez worked to a T, and Kasper Junker just, yeah, a very good hat trick. I thought Reds were much improved in that second half, one of their best displays so far of this season to get back to 3-3. It was, yeah, absolutely incredible 90 minutes there. And yeah, I thought it was going to be very difficult to beat.
Well, yes, little did we know that, yeah, it was all going to kick off on Saturday. And well, yeah, we'll begin our roundup with Kobe again and the battle of the bottom at the Lemon Gas Stadium. Of course, listeners, you might remember earlier on in the season, Shonan, who were bottom at kickoff, played a similar fixture. That time it was against Hiroshima, who were second from bottom at the time. And well, yes, for the second time this season, Shonan hosted as the bottom club, hosted the second from bottom team. But this time the script was flipped, Sam. But yeah, speaking of late drama, well, this was drama central, no question, as the game went into well over 10 minutes of second half stoppage time. But right back inside the first 20 minutes or so, Sam, Kobe didn't realize it at the time, but Koya Yuruki having a goal disallowed for handball was a horrid sign of things to come for them.
Yeah, it was. It was unfortunate. It was just a refereeing mistake, this one. There's a little 1-2. Muto plays it up to Yuruki. I think it hits his shoulder more than anything. I don't think it hits his hand. But before Yuruki is able to shoot, the referee is quick to blow the whistle, doesn't allow the play to go on. And yeah, it's ruled out. It's hard to tell because the Shonan defender does stop slightly. So it's hard to tell whether he would have blocked it if it just carried on. But it does look like Yuruki was just going to go on and score. He did put the ball in the back of the net. So yeah, that was a difficult one for Vissel to take. I mean, there's an argument to say with VAR, should you play on a little bit longer like you do with offsides and allow the play to go through so VAR could check it, but the referee didn't do that. He blew very quickly, So as soon as he does that, the play can't continue. So Urugi doesn't score. So, yeah, that was an unfortunate one for them. It would have been against the run of play, to be fair. The way they started that first half, I thought they were dreadful. They were so slow. They weren't, well, I think Otoko Sakai himself said after the game that the team weren't awake for that first half. And, I mean, he might have been talking about himself because he was definitely asleep as Shonan scored their the opening goal.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant, mate. You've set me up for one of the segues of the season there. That's absolutely tremendous. Yeah, so Shonan took the lead 5 minutes before the break when Daiki Sugioka shot from distance. Daiya Maekawa parried, but Shuto Machino had escaped the attentions of Gotoku Sakai on the right side of the box for Shonan on Kobe's left, of course. And Machino was free to prod home from inside the 6-yard box. Sakai pointed to Machino as if he thought he should have been flagged offside. But yes, Machino was definitely level at worst when Sugioka shot. And that was Belmare going into the sheds ahead. And then 5 minutes into this, 5 or 6 minutes into the second half, Sam, it was a 2-0 to the hosts. And this was, yeah, just a nightmare as Ryo Hatsusei's back pass. Well, I'm not sure who he intended it for, whether it was Yuki Kobayashi or the keeper, Daiya Maekawa, but it was gleefully cut out by Machino, who skipped around Maekawa and then passed the ball into an unguarded net.
Yeah, it was absolutely dreadful. Comes on as a substitute at halftime. And I think Lottner is probably regretting that decision. It's such a poor back pass. As you say, who knows who it was intended to. It got nowhere near either Kobayashi or Maekawa. And much no credit to him. He was alert to the potential there. He gets in, just skips around the goalkeeper and finishes it well. And 2-0 to Shonan at that time. And I mean, yeah, just a dreadful situation for Vissel to find themselves in.
Yeah, just appeared to be shooting themselves in the foot over and over again, although they did get a lifeline in the game just before the hour when Andres Iniesta swung in a corner, and it was brilliantly headed in by Ryuho Kikuchi, who was basically wearing Kazuki Oiwa, marking especially closely, or basically, yeah, trying to get a piggyback, I think, off of Kikuchi. But very strong in the challenge as he ran onto the ball and nodded past Kosei Tani, who then saved a kind of a tame-ish effort from the sub, Bojan Krukic. Deep, and especially deep into second half stoppage time, Sam. In the 99th minute, Andres Iniesta fired a 25-yard free kick that flicked off Tariq El-Yanoussi, who was on the left-hand side of Tani's wall. And then it also skimmed off Yoshinori Muto's arm on the way in, and cue some furious scenes from the Kobe players as the goal was eventually disallowed by VAR in the 101st minute.
This week in VAR. This week in VAR. This week.
This is absolutely crazy. And Kobe were absolutely furious, and you can understand the reasons why they were. I mean, the goal has to be disallowed because it does hit Muto's arm. He knows nothing about it, but it does hit his arm. So the rules are that has to be ruled out. But there is a call for potential double standards because it flicks off Tariq El-Yanoussi's hand in the wall. The only difference is that it hits El-Yanoussi, but his arm is in a fairly natural position. I don't think he can move it too far closer in. And so it does flick him, but because he's not making himself bigger, it's not worthy of a penalty. It's not the same as it's not like for a defender, if the ball hits your arm, it's not automatically a penalty in the way that if it hits a striker, it's automatically disallowed as a goal. So you can't judge it by the same metrics as you would do. And I can understand why Kobe fans would say, well, it hit Muto's arm, it was disallowed. So if it hits Tariq, we should get something. But that's unfortunately for them not the way it is. So no penalty was given for Tariq's handball, which I think is absolutely fair. It goes on, hits Muto, and it is disallowed. I can understand the frustration, especially as you've gone and lost 2-1 to a team that really Kobe should be beating. But yeah, it wasn't their day for a number of things here. But I think the referee and the VAR got this correct.
Right, so yeah, the Yuruki one earlier on at the early in the 20th or so minute was a mistake, but from then on, we think they've pretty much got everything right, and including the disallowing that goal. I mean, yeah, Muto was furious for your rookies, wasn't he? I mean, that's he kind of said he stalled out for the rest of his afternoon, and then he was apoplectic at the end of the game, which, as you say, you can understand. But ultimately, as frustrating as it is for Kobe, their players and their supporters, obviously, it's a difficult one to take, but it does appear that it's the correct decision looking at all of the replays. So there you go then. Shawnun are, they're happy as they could possibly be. They've hung on at the death. You could see what it meant to Kosei Tani as he punched the floor in utter joy at the full-time whistle, which sounded basically right after that goal was disallowed. And it means that, to everybody's surprise, although the way they've started the season, obviously it seemed like it was a matter of time, Kobe are now outright bottom of J1, 3 points behind Shonan now. And, Shimizu occupy the promotion relegation playoff spot. But, from outright safety, Kobe are now 7 points away from that. And, we wondered whether that Tosu landslide victory was going to kickstart them, Sam. But since then, they've obviously had that, heartbreaking late loss at home to Kawasaki, and now they've missed out on drawing with the last kick of the game thanks to VAR away at Shonan. So this annus horribilis just continues for Vissel.
Yeah, it's a couple of excruciating last-minute heartaches for them. You thought they played okay in midweek, and you thought, okay, they're continuing that from the Tosu game where they were obviously a lot better. But that late goal, I think, it just really affected them, I think. And they just didn't come out of the blocks against Shonan. And Shonan, they don't to concede two against them, first of all, is dreadful because they don't look like scoring at all. But yeah, Kobe did not really threaten at all in that first half until maybe added time when Iniesta had that one shot that went wide. But yeah, really, they were outplayed, I thought, by Shonan in that first half, which is completely unacceptable. And yeah, they went 2-0 down. The response initially was very good with Kikuchi's goal, and then Boyan had a chance. I think Tani had to make one or two saves in and around the hour mark. But then after that, it was fairly comfortable for Shonan. Vissel just didn't seem to have, if they're getting the ball to Iniesta, and if it's not working for Iniesta and they're not getting anything from him, Muto is the other target. But with Shonan so deep, he can't really run in behind, and once those two options have gone, they don't really seem to have too much else. They made a few changes, Boyan the most likely to score out of those, but yeah, they were really struggling with creativity. So yeah, it was a difficult one for them. They couldn't find any quality. And they were without their goal. There was, I don't know really where to go with them for at the moment, Kobe. It's not really working if it's not working for Iniesta.
Yeah, I mean, where do they go from here? I mean, we've been saying that for, basically since the beginning of the season when the alarm bell started ringing, fairly early, I suppose. We thought, oh, well, it's too soon to make a judgment, but we're approaching the halfway mark of the season. So it's, I think we've got a decent enough sample size now to realize that, Kobe are deep in the poop this season, and they're going to have to haul themselves out for Shonan. Well, they obviously saw Hiroshima surge up the table after winning the first battle of the bottom of the season, and as we're going to come on to shortly, they've risen up to fourth in the table now with their win over Kyoto on the weekend. I don't think anybody's expecting a surge like that from Shonan after winning this particular game on Saturday, but for them, a hugely important win, as all of them are going to be for the Greens from Hiratsuka this season. So well done to them, and well done to VAR for coming to the correct decision there, as we said, as painful as it was for Vissel to take. All right, so next, you might be expecting us to rise up to the top of the table with our next group of games, listeners, but instead we're going to the other fixture from Saturday that had the most dramatic finish as well, that included infighting between players from the same team, and then the captain of Gunba Osaka approaching their supporters behind the goal, and things bubbling over basically at Gunba Osaka at the end of a 3-1 defeat away at Cerezo Osaka in the Osaka Derby. We mentioned that it was one of two big derbies over the weekend, with the Purple Derby, Hiroshima Kyoto, the other. But yes, Osaka bragging rights were up for grabs, Sam. And again, this is going to be an episode where we're almost exclusively praising VAR. And we'll have to do it again here for Gunba opening the scoring just past the half hour, when Hiroto Yamami's header clearly crossed the line. And despite not 100% conclusive evidence, VAR has decided that the ball did cross the line, much to everybody's relief, because I think we're all of the opinion that, if VAR didn't see the entire ball behind the line with Kim's body blocking the best angle, then the goal might not have been given. But thankfully for Gunba and Yamami, it was.
Yeah, I was with you. I thought that VAR would probably just err on the side of caution and not give it, even though I was pretty convinced from the first time I saw it that it had gone across the line. So, yeah, congratulations to them on getting that right. It's still a little weird to see VAR deal with goal line, what goal line technology has dealt with across Europe and much of the world. And I guess it's financial reasons why goal line technology isn't in the J-League. But, yeah, at least VAR managed to confirm this one. It was... And I wouldn't say it was swift. I'd say that was the one thing I would say about it. They did take their time over it, but yeah, they have come to the correct result. And fair play to Yamami, who's been searching for that goal all season. It's not quite worked out for him, but I'm very happy for him that he managed to get one here. Definitely crossed the line, and Kim did very well to try and cover it up a little bit with the way he moved it and got it back on the line. Said, "Oh, it's definitely not crossed." But yeah, VAR has worked well there again.
Yeah, unbelievable stuff, really. But fair dues again to Gunba. You mentioned last week how severely they were hit by COVID cases, Sam. And obviously that was still the case this week, with a number of first team regulars are still out of the picture. So, yeah, to go ahead in a game like this was, had the potential to be another huge day for Gunba, coming on the heels of obviously last week's win away at Kashiwa. But it wasn't to be, and Cerezo equalised just before the hour through the Australian forward Adam Taggart, and then in the 66th minute went ahead through Hiroaki Okuno. So, yeah, Cerezo deserve credit themselves for turning this game on its head before what came at the death for Gunba, that basically soured the entire afternoon for them.
But I think we should really, for now, just focus on Cerezo and the quality that they had in these first two goals. And that was really the difference on the day, was the quality of a final pass or the quality of build-up play. It was just there with Cerezo, where it wasn't for large parts for Gunba. For that first goal, the ball from Kiyotake to Okuno was absolutely sublime. Got him in behind. Then a little bit of fortune maybe as it falls to Taggart, but probably earned their luck. And then for the second goal, it was again Kiyotake down, playing it down the left-hand side. And Yamanaka, as we know he can do, puts in a peach of a cross. And Okuno again, who had a very good game, arrived late to score. So they deserve their goals. They were very well crafted for Cerezo. And Gunba, for them, it wasn't quite working as well going forward. I think there was also probably some tiredness in the legs, because most of them probably had to play in midweek in the Levain Cup, when ordinarily the first team gets rested in these sorts of situations. But because of the injuries, because of the COVID cases, a lot of these players had to play again. I think that was getting to them. And yeah, it wasn't all working out. And then, yeah, it all boiled to a head as Genshoji let out his feelings in the direction of Leandro Pereira.
Yeah, okay. So for the listeners that haven't seen that, Sam, and I haven't seen the entire incident from, I guess, go to woe, or just what the DAZN highlights showed. So Shoji, is he upset with Leandro for not showing for a throw? Or it does appear that that's the what's happened from the highlights. So was there something bubbling away a few minutes before that you can recall? Or is it just two teammates that maybe aren't getting along with each other at the moment, and it just happened to boil over on the pitch?
I think the origin of it is just general frustration from Genshoji about the way things are going. And Leandro Pereira was just a target at that moment, as there's a throw in there. He's not happy that Leandro Pereira is not moving, and I think that's a fair criticism of Leandro Pereira and his lack of movement up front. It doesn't give too many options for midfield. He doesn't help out enough, and Jorge obviously took exception to that. I thought, I've had absolute enough of this. I'm going to call him out, and yeah, that's where the argument ensued from there. Leandro Pereira obviously not very happy to have been called out in that manner, and it looks very unprofessional, but to be fair, I quite like it from Shoji. I like that there's a bit of passion there. He's not happy with the way that the game is going out, so to a degree I like what he's doing, but really that probably should be something sorted out in the dressing room.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could see the pained expression on the face of the manager, Tomohiro Katanosaka, on the sideline as he tried to defuse the situation. But, yeah, I mean, a couple of minutes left in a derby, you're losing 2-1. And I guess, yeah, the passion is admirable, but your supporters want to see you, yeah, pushing on and trying to get that equaliser. But instead, yeah, Gumba Hearts were broken in the fourth minute of the second half stoppage time when Okuno got his second of the game. And well, the celebrations were pretty epic for Cerezo supporters, and you can understand why a huge come from behind victory in the Osaka derby. But yeah, for Gumba, a bad situation with that clash between Shoji and Pereira right at the death. Yeah, was made even worse by that icing on the cake from Okuno.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, full credit to Cerezo. It was a well-worked counter-attack. It was another ball that wasn't quite that good from Ishige into the box. And yeah, they're exposed. They've thrown everyone forward. And Maikuma times his pass perfectly to Okuno. Okuno finishes it very well to cap off a great result and performance from him. And yeah, they deserve their celebrations, Cerezo. But unfortunately, it wasn't the same at the other end. Miura goes over to the support there. I believe Dan Olowitz reported there was a bottle thrown. There was various other unsavoury scenes towards the end of that game. And yeah, both sides actually, I think this has happened a few times in these Osaka derbies, and both teams put out press releases before the game, kind of urging for calm, which is very rare from what I can recall in Japanese football. So you could tell there were tensions already boiling before the game. And yeah, the manner in which Gamba lost that game, the manner in which their players probably conducted themselves, has not gone down well with the supporters. And then a few of them have crossed the line. So hopefully they're identified and given the correct punishment.
Yeah, you just hate to see it though, don't you? And I mean, yeah, Miura, was it bubbling over for him as well, or did he think he was going over to defuse the situation? I don't know whether he stormed over there or whether he was trying to play a peacemaker. But it's it's not a good look at all for Gumba, as they lose the game, and they lose quite a bit of face in what went on in the last few minutes of the game, and then obviously the immediate aftermath as well. So tough for them, but for Cerezo and their supporters, well, they're loving life. These two teams were knotted together with identical records at kickoff, and now Cerezo find themselves five spots above Gumba in the table, up into the giddy heights of seventh. And just a point behind Hiroshima and Kashiwa, who are fourth and fifth respectively at the moment. Speaking of Hiroshima, then we will move up to move down actually from Osaka down to Hiroshima for a game that ended with an identical result, a 3-1 home win for Sanfrecce over Kyoto in the weekend's other big derby. Of course, it was the Purple Derby. Sanfrecce versus Sanga. And our man, Makoto Mitsuta, well, he's not the best kept secret in J1 anymore, Sam, because everybody knows all about him. A nice new hairdo. He's been to the barbers, obviously, and got a nice new dye job. And he fired Sanfrecce into the lead in just the fifth minute here.
Yeah, I mean, he can do no wrong, can he, at the moment? Hairstyle or football, whatever, it's all working for him. And this is another terrific goal. I mean, he's just found his position in behind the two strikers. He runs off them. He's very rarely tracked. I mean, they're so clever the way that he times these runs. And then he gets in. He was under pressure on the edge of the area, but he still manages to find the bottom corner with great composure. I mean, yeah, he's not going to be in this league very long, is he? I mean, he's had quite an incredible start to his career. And yeah, let's just enjoy it while we can.
Yeah, I reckon. I'm wondering how high his price might go in J League fantasy if he just keeps scoring a goal week after week after week. But yeah, he's been absolutely terrific. It's a massive understatement to say that. And yeah, got Hiroshima off on the right foot, as I said, in just the fifth minute here. It was an interesting weekend for some of our favourite whipping boys up front, Sam. A couple of them got on the score sheet. One of them, Junior Santos, who made it 2-0 to Sanfrecce in the 26th minute. But, well, I mean, he almost cocked up a one-on-one with the keeper. But, yeah, at the second time of asking, the ball found itself back at his feet, and he did manage to fire home. So fair dues to the big man.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's worked hard. I mean, he's probably the best of an okay bunch that Hiroshima, before Ben Khalifa came in, with Nagai there and Ayakawa and Douglas Vieira. I mean, he did obviously have that wonderful spell on loan against Yokohama F. Marinos, but has rarely found that sort of sharpness since. And maybe he's just about getting there. He does get quite lucky as he rounds the keeper and the ball just bounces to him. But yeah, full credit to him. He hasn't had that luck for large parts of his career at Hiroshima. So yeah, maybe things are turning around. I think the system really works for him, the way they're playing. I think he's finally building a little bit of a partnership with Ben Khalifa. I think that, yeah, it was Ben Khalifa that played him through here. So, yeah, it's working out nicely for him. He's getting a little bit more confidence. So, yeah, very happy for him to get his goal here.
Yeah, that's fantastic. As I say, well done to the big man. Kosuke Taketomi made it 2-1 by getting Kyoto back into the game 3 minutes before half time, Sam. So we'll go on to discuss Ben Khalifa icing the game. But yeah, for Kyoto overall, then it's obviously been a difficult month or so for them. I mean, they're still in a decent position in the table, and they have a, as I've said a couple of times in recent weeks, they probably would have bitten anybody's hand off for the points tally they have at this stage. It's just, I guess, frustrating for them and their supporters that they had appeared to, you know, set a benchmark for the, you know, the sort of performances they would be capable of. And obviously it's a difficult league to be consistent in. We've seen that from a number of teams on a year to year basis. But yeah, this is just another one where that's got away from them. On the positive side, they've shown that they don't need Peter Otaka to score each and every goal for the rest of the season. So it's good to see somebody else take up some of the scoring load. But overall, with Hiroshima in decent form, although they'd only won one of their last five, as much as we'd been bigging them up. But I mean, still, they had been rising up the league while Kyoto had slightly been going in the opposite direction. So I don't know, you know, don't want to be patronising to Kyoto again, but is it just another one of those weeks for them?
Yeah, to a degree. I just think they didn't get to grips with the way Hiroshima played. I mean, Cho, usually the way he's managed to get success this year is he's figured out the opposition and he sets up his team accordingly. It's not like Kyoto have got a certain way of playing and that's how they play every game. They have definitely tried to adapt to the opposition. I just don't think he got to grips with the way Hiroshima playing, the pace, the kind of intense pressing, the movement, especially from Mitsuta and Morishima, who's a little bit deeper now when he has originally been playing kind of as a number 10. Now he's playing as one of those deeper line midfielders alongside Notsuda. So they just didn't get to grips with it, I don't think, defensively. And yeah, they're just lacking a little bit more up front now. I mean, yeah, it was a decent, like, the one thing I would say is they kept going in this game. That 2-0, you could have thought, OK, it's getting out of their hands, but they did bounce back fairly well. Utaka at the hand, at the forefront of most of it, obviously fed Taketomi. He had another run towards the start of the second half where it was just a really good recovery tackle from Araki that denied him his goal. So I don't think it was like a that poor a performance. I just think Hiroshima kind of caught them cold a little bit. And once they went 2-0 up, it was always a difficult way back for Kyoto.
All right, then. So, yeah, Nassim Ben Khalifa made it to 3-1 in the 66th minute and, yeah, sealed another victory for Sanfrecce. So it's worth remembering, Sam, that they didn't win any of their first five league games. And indeed, when they travelled to Shonan for the first battle of the bottom of the season in match day six, yes, they were second from bottom and absolutely floundering. So since then, including that win in match day six, they've... they've now played, yeah, nine games since then, including match day six, I mean. And, yeah, since then they've risen from 17th to now sit fourth in the table. And as I said, that's coming into the game, having only won one of their previous five. So they'd eked out some draws as well. And it's just, it's been phenomenal to see. And Michael Skibber obviously deserves so much credit for what he's been able to get out of this group. And, well, yeah, heaven forbid, if Junior Santos ever recaptures that sort of form he had for Yokohama F. Marinos, then they might just about take some pipping for a top three spot. But we'll that's obviously a huge bridge we'll have to cross, as Santos looks like he can't kick it against the side of a barn these days for the most part. But anyway, yeah, they as a group, they're obviously doing tremendously well, and sitting fourth in the table now after 14 match days. Well, I'm not sure even Skibber could have seen that in his wildest dreams after that loss to Kawasaki in match day 5 that sent them 17th.
No, I can't imagine he did. I mean, he did, but has really limited time with the players. It's hard for him when he was originally managing via Zoom just to really get that message across. And you could tell from the first few performances that really it didn't look like he'd managed to imprint anything from afar. But yeah, since he's come in, he's kind of revolutionised this team. And yeah, if they did have a clinical striker or a Santos in his absolute peak form, then some of those draws in the last few games would have turned into wins as well. And they could easily be challenging for that top three, as it is they're the best of the rest at the moment. And but it's been a tremendous turnaround from them, because looking at this team last season, they haven't changed a great deal in it. I mean, Mitsuda obviously is the big key, the way that he has managed to come in. I think that's more credit to Michael Skibber, because I think Mitsuda had maybe played one game from like the left wing back position, and yeah, he played quite well there as well, actually. But yeah, Skibber has found him his perfect role in behind the two strikers and got the best out of him. And then, yeah, he's worked with what he has, really. I mean, they've always had a very solid defence, and now Shiotani is back in that back line, so it's a little bit more progressive from that defence. You've got someone who can play out from there. The wing-backs, I think, have been exceptional. He's got the best out of Kashua, which we haven't seen for maybe two or three seasons now. I think Fuji is great, and so is Morishima. So yeah, he's managed to eke out the absolute most from the squad that he had. And yeah, if he can just improve those strikers, then they've got a very, very good squad. I think depth could become an issue later in the season, especially as they're not quite used to this gegenpressing. So I imagine towards the end of the season, tiredness will probably creep in, and I don't really have the options beneath that first 11 to have that extended push. So I would rule them out at this stage of an extended run towards the top three. But yeah, fourth could become a Champions League position, and why not Hiroshima at the moment?
Well, yeah, as you say, best of the rest. That's certainly the way they're shaping up at the moment. And they've risen all the way up to fourth with, it must be said, a number of teams they've risen above in the past couple of weeks that were probably in false positions after they'd made the most of their starts to the season. But yeah, it seemed to be slipping back into the pack. And I mean Kyoto are obviously one of those teams, FC Tokyo in a similar boat as Kashiwa Reysol, who those latter two teams faced off on Saturday. And we'll be leaving that game until last, let me tell you, listeners. We did mention that it was a crazy weekend in J1, and continuing on with the theme is the fact that the top three in J1 all failed to win in match day 14, and they all failed to win in what looked like decent enough matchups for them to carry on where they had left off in the past couple of match days. And it was a very much a mixed bag. So we might take these three games together, Sam, and I guess we can discuss the merits of each of them in varying degrees of detail. But yeah, firstly then, Tosu hosted new leaders Kawasaki, who, as we mentioned, rose back to the top of the table with that dramatic late win at Kobe on Wednesday. But this finished 0-0, which I guess to most of us who know our history is probably what wasn't that much of a surprise, as the real estate agent in front of the Station Stadium has not been a happy hunting ground for Frontale in the past couple of seasons. They lost their last season 3-1, but of course with the huge caveat that was the game after they had secured the title the previous midweek. But back in 2020, they also drew there on that occasion 1-1. And, well, I mean, it was a game of half chances, some audacious play from the youngsters of Tosu. I mean, what Yuto Iwasaki was doing, shooting from almost the byline, 25 yards from goal, out on the left, but he managed to manufacture a shot that came back off the crossbar in just the sixth minute. But I guess as the game progressed, the major talking point was about 10 minutes or so from time, when Taniguchi, who was Kawasaki's hero in midweek, of course, was had a yellow card upgraded to a red after he took out Yuki Kakuta about 35 yards from goal.
Yeah, it's one of those. We've had quite a few this season and last season where they're a little bit harsh. They look like he's quite away from goal. He's quite far out to the wing as well. But the recovering defenders arguably aren't getting there, and it does look like the striker will run in on goal. So I think it's a harsh one, but it follows the consistency and the precedent that has already been set. So if the rest are red cards, then unfortunately Taniguchi has to go as well. I think it's a difficult one for him to take, and it's probably a little harsh on him. But yeah, in the end, I think with the other decisions, I think, he had to go. And yeah, a disappointing one for him. But yeah, I think, again, the referee has got it just about correct.
Okay, so that's interesting, Tam, because I think, the last one of these that we discussed, I was of the opinion that, this was, it was, very, very harsh on the defender. And I think you set me straight that it was probably the correct decision. So I don't know, are we switching roles here? Because I thought that was fair enough. I mean, there were three, covering defenders, as you say, but they were at least 5 yards behind the play and very central, while Kakita was approaching the left-hand side of the box. So, it sounds like we've flipped the script ourselves here.
Well, what I would say with this one is the way that Kakita pushes it past Taniguchi, he hits it quite away in front of him, and I don't think it's absolutely 100% certain that he's getting on the end of it, which is the caveat that I would have. But I still do think it was probably just about a red card, although still quite harsh. But yeah, they're all a little bit difficult there, because with that Dogzo thing, there is so many factors that the referee has to think of. I think there's a good five or six in terms of where they are, angle towards goal, recovering defenders. So there's a lot that the referee has to think about in his mind as he makes the first decision. He gives a yellow initially here, and at least with the VAR, they can assess it up, and then they slow it down, which kind of makes it more likely that he probably can get on the end of it, I suppose. And they've given the red card that way. I think it's harsh but it's just about correct. So I don't know if we're completely swapped roles, but I'm just accepting the precedent, I think.
Yeah, no, fair enough then. All right, so it ultimately ended 0-0, but VAR continued on their impressive match day by, I think getting that decision just about right. Again, a difficult one for Taniguchi, but I think he took it fairly respectfully and didn't blow his top as some other people did across the match day. The next game then, it's Reds 1, Kashima 1. Reds deserve enormous credit, as you said at the start of the episode, Sam, for coming back from 3-0 down against Yokohama F. Marinos to draw last Wednesday night. But all that did was take them out of the bottom three. And this draw takes them up to 14th. But in the cold light of day, I mean, they've now drawn seven straight J1 games. And I mean, yes, F. Marinos and Antlers are obviously two of the toughest opponents you can play in the division. And to face them back to back in the space of 4 days is a tough test for Ricardo Rodriguez's side. But as we know, Reds want to be at the sharp end of the table and they want to be playing in games like these. So, the fact that they find themselves down in 14th, frankly, for them and their supporters, isn't good enough. And I'm sure Rodriguez knows that and is very frustrated and is desperate to turn these draws into wins to see them haul themselves up the table. I mean, it wouldn't take much, obviously, Sam. They're on 14 points. They're just seven behind fourth placed Hiroshima. So by no means out of the ACL race, as we have played 14 out of the 34 league games. But I think Reds have a run in them, but it's just a matter of when that's going to come out.
Yeah, I think so. I just look at the players that they've got. I think it's got to click eventually. You just look at Isaka, Juncker, and Matsuo, Schalke, Moberg. They all look, they've got quality there. He's just trying to figure out how to best place them. And the positives you would take from the last two games is they've fallen behind in both of them, but they've shown a great fight and they've managed to come back into both of them. And they've looked the better side in both second halves. But if they just have to match that in that first half, because they were so slow out of the blocks against Yokohama midweek, and this one they find themselves one down after 6 minutes, and it's just, you can't be fighting every game coming from behind. That's why they're drawing so many games, because they're always fighting from beneath. They have to get on the front foot early, they have to take the lead, they have to take the initiative in the games, and they're a bit too reactive at the moment, Reds, and they are reacting fairly well to eke out these draws, I guess. But yeah, it's just too many times that they find themselves behind, and yeah, I don't know if that's a mentality thing, just not focusing at the start of games. But yeah, that's the thing that they really have to work on if they are to move clear in towards mid-table and then up towards a late push for the ACL, which I guess is probably still just about the aim. At least fourth place can still be considered an aim at this stage. But yeah, it's just, I think all the ingredients are there. They just have to get it right and get it to click. And there are certain signs in the last two games that he can do, but yeah, they haven't put it together for a full 90 yet.
No, and yeah, as we say, Rodriguez will be desperate to break this run of draws with a victory, of course, and yeah, to get them properly moving in the right direction. Obviously, these two draws in the past few days have taken them, yes, up a couple of spots in the table, but they want to be much higher. But there's such a logjam developing in mid-table from, well, basically from, yeah, just outside the relegation zone all the way up to, as we said, Hiroshima working their way up to fourth this week. So, as I say, it looks like it's coming for Reds. And Sam, we might have to have a chat about Arthur Kaike, I think. We know ISA Wada and Yuma Suzuki have formed a lethal partnership up top for Antlers, but are Wada, Suzuki and Kaike becoming a big three for Antlers? Another goal here for Kaike. He side-footed home a volley after Shu Sakunishikawa could only parry Wada's fiercely struck shot, as you said, in just the sixth minute to give Antlers an early lead. Kaike is becoming a part of the furniture. And yes, he's had a number of other chances throughout this game and is, he's looking absolutely terrific in the form of his Antlers career so far.
Oh, absolutely. He cemented himself into that side in the last couple of months, and there's a lot of competition for his place. If you think Araki's there, Doi's there, Alano's there, and he's managing to start, and they've got that. It's a kind of advanced diamond to a degree. You've got Higuchi and Pituka as the midfield, and then you've got two wide players either side of them, but they're really high and pushed up in Kaike and Izumi that has been for the last month or so. And yeah, it's just working so well. It's so fluid that that front four, five, it could be any, it could be six at times with Kashima. You see Suzuki play deep, you can see him out on the left wing, and Kaike then fills his role, and it's just all a bit of a mismatch that it's so difficult to defend with. And Kaike himself is so comfortable in all those roles, and he's finding himself in areas to score goals, and he's just popping up pretty much everywhere, and full of confidence. And it's not something we've necessarily seen over the last season or so that he's been there. He's kind of been in and out of the side and not really got any sort of run behind him, but now he obviously has the manager's backing. And as he started the last four league games and what is it, eight of the last 10, so he's doing incredibly well. And it's just a worry for opposition if alongside Suzuki and Wada and Pituka and Higuchi, we've got another very good player alongside of him. And he's doing very well.
Yeah, it's a sad day for fans of the Prince, as it appears that his days as a regular starting member for Antlers are now in the past. But he'll keep his head up, I'm sure, and continue to give his all when called upon by Rene Weiler. But it looks like Kaike has well and truly gone past Sean Modoy in the pecking order there. And, difficult one for me to take personally. But, enjoying Kaike. His beard is on point at the moment, no doubt about that. And, his game is as well, as he continues to make positive contributions to Kashima for Reds. Yeah, they had to come from behind again, as Sam mentioned. And they got back on level terms just before halftime after Takahiro Akimoto deserves credit for chasing a long ball over the top. It did appear to be a lost cause, but he managed to track the ball down just before it crossed the byline, and indeed dug out a cross that hit the arm of Ikuma Sekigawa. The two of them had a nice chuckle as they trotted back into their positions, as I guess they waited to see if VAR was going to have a decent look. They did, or she did, and yes, it gave a penalty that Alex Schultz fired past Quonson Tate for 1-1. And let me just check. That's right, isn't it, Sam? It's Schultz. It wasn't Schalke. So it's extremely confusing for me on a week-to-week basis. But yeah, Schultz, the defender, fired home from the penalty spot, as Schalke, the forward, watched on from the bench at that point of proceedings, right?
Yeah, it's not fair for commentators or anyone, really, if these two are going to play together, especially if the centre-back finds himself in the penalty area taking a penalty. Yeah, just stick to your own positions, please, and make it easier for everyone. But yeah, Schultz seems to be a very good penalty taker, and he converted that well. I think the referee have got the decision correct with the penalty. I don't think it's there's not much Sekigawa can do as he's diving in, but his arm is up, it blocks the cross from going in, so I don't think there can be any real complaints for that. And yeah, it was good, as you say, very good work from Akimoto down that left side, showing great industry to not give up on that and win his side a penalty. So yeah, it was a crucial goal for Reds, because it was a bit of a bitty first half. I thought Kashima were just about the better side, but then this goal gives the Reds a platform, which they did build on in the second half.
Yeah, now in the last couple of episodes, I think we sympathised with Reds as they had the short end of the stick on a couple of officiating decisions, VAR or otherwise, and maybe they got one back in midweek against F. Marinos. I think it was Juncker's first goal was marginally offside or onside. It was one of those that was was ultimately given in favor of the attacker, and not sure the F. Marinos supporters were wrapped with that, but they might have been due a little bit of luck, Reds. But then so what happened in the 70th minute, Sam, when Akimoto frankly brilliantly headed in Ken Iwao's free kick? He stooped low to head in across Quonson Tate from basically right on the edge of the 6-yard box. But the referee, Mr. Nishimura, blew up after, it must be said, taking a second or two to pause for dramatic effect before whistling for a foul that Takuya Iwanami had impeded his marker in front of Akimoto. I guess in some respects, running interference for Akimoto, so he would have a clear view of the ball and be able to head in the manner that he did. So we were talking in the green room, and you're all in favour of this decision as well. So again, we're very much in uncharted territory here this week. I think all the praise we're giving referees.
Yeah, I'm not particularly comfortable about it, but I did like the song and dance that you made about the decision. So that was a lovely bit of theatre before you award a decision. But I think he gets it right again. It's unfortunate for Iwanami, because, again, he's involved in the goal for his side being disallowed, as he was last week against Hiroshima. But apparently he doesn't want his side to have nice things. And as you say, runs interference is the way of it. It's probably a foul in the first place, but even so, he's coming from an offside position, so even if he hasn't fouled him, he's definitely interfering as he runs in on that the first defender. So unfortunately, Rakamoto, as you say, it was a great finish, and it's one of those where you're really upset that sort of goal is ruled out. But yeah, Iwanami, just sort yourself out and leave your teammates to score goals, because that's twice in a week now he's cost his team a goal by just being in the way and being there.
Yeah, not great from Iwanami, but giving praise to Mr. Nishimura, that's just doesn't sound right. But anyway, so in between that disallowed goal, Kaike had a couple of chances for Antlers, but it remained at 1-1 until second half stoppage time. And then Well, yeah, another fantastic flourish at the end when Reds went extra close to winning it on two separate occasions. Ken Iwao's shot in the 95th minute, Sam, off a step from 25 yards. He's thumped it into the bar, and the ball has basically bounced where he shot from. It was hit so crisply. It basically cannoned 25 yards straight back to him off the crossbar. It was absolutely tremendous. And as we'll come on to later, Adailton did basically the identical thing for FC Tokyo. So, the crossbar's got a workout across the country. And, they're well and truly in top shape working order. That was a remarkable strike from Iwao. And to see it ping, as I say, 25 yards away from goal, I guess it was a relief at the time for Antlers. And then, with literally the last kick of the game, the midweek hero, Kasper Juncker, had a sight of goal and a chance to win it for Reds. But again, Antlers were indebted to their defence. And this time it was Koki Anzai who made a block. And the ball bounced away to safety for Antlers. And Mr. Nishimura blew up for full time. So, yeah, they had to come from behind, as you said, Sam. They could have almost won it at the death. I mean, that would have taken the roof off Saitama Stadium. As we say, a frantic finale. But again, it just wasn't to be for Urawa.
Yeah, it was a crazy ending. And this was a couple of minutes after they'd probably had their best chance. And you say it was rare that we praise Nishimura. I think I'm going to criticise Yusuke Matsue for the first time in my life, because he got in, he robbed Sekikawa, and he was there on the byline, and there's like three players in the middle. He has to cross to one of them, but instead he just shoots straight at Quantum Tay. It was a poor decision. It was another chance for Reds that he probably should have done a lot better with, and that started this series of attacks. I mean, a wow shot, absolutely incredible. It's a bit like, you remember that viral video of Ronaldinho where he just volleys it off the crossbar and back and then keeps volleying it? It was that sort of trajectory on a wow shot. That was great. And then the defending from Anzai was superb, and generally it was for Antlers as well. I mean, it was a massive concern of mine at the start of the season looking at that defense, but the way that they have worked together after a bit of a shaky period to start with, I think has been incredible. Kento Misao leading them at the back when he's not really that comfortable himself as a centre back. But for them to have only conceded 14 in 14, I think is incredible given how attacking they are and the way that they set up and the inexperience at the back line. But yeah, they did ride their luck, I suppose, towards the end of this game. And yeah, Reds will feel very unlucky that they haven't managed to grab a winner. But yeah, it was just a really exciting end to the game.
Yeah, most definitely. So, well done to both teams for an entertaining contest. And, again, we're looking for more from Reds in the next couple of weeks, and they might get their season on track this Wednesday, as we'll come on to. There's a full round of top flight fixtures in midweek. And, why not? Reds start their rise up the table then. We'll hope for the best from them. And, so that meant that both Frontale and Antlers, while drawing away from home, had, in terms of the title race, dropped points then, and it was up to Yokohama F. Marinos to take advantage. The players obviously might not have known those full-time scores, Sam, as they ran out to kick off at 7 o'clock, basically straight after the Frontale and Antlers games had concluded. But the equation was simple for F. Marinos, having begun the match day 4 points behind Frontale. They had the opportunity to close to within two after Frontale's draw, and also just to 1 point behind Antlers after they had obviously been held at Urawa as well. But it was not to be, and Avispa Fukuoka, Sam, deserve enormous credit for winning at home 1-0 thanks to that man, Jordy Crooks. He's volleyed in the winner just before the hour, and a terrific goal from him, and it capped a huge day for the faithful at the Best Denki Stadium. They were they turned up, and they were rewarded with a fighting performance from their team, and a massive 3 points against a title chasing F. Marinos outfit.
Yeah, terrific performance from Avispa. I mean, what you know about Avispa is they're going to be very good defensively. They've only conceded 9 all season, so they have that as a base point. But in this one, they kind of took a yard or two further forward. They engaged Marinos a lot higher at the pitch than traditionally that they do. I think they spotted maybe a couple of weaknesses in that Marinos team when you've got a centre-back partnership of Eduardo, who's looked a little shaky this season, and Saneto played. I think that's the first time that they've played together. It was a team without Hatanaka. It was without Takuya Kida in midfield, which is, I always think, when he doesn't play, the Marinos are a lot weaker, and there's a little bit that they can get out there of Avispa, and they did. They pressed them a little bit higher. They caught them out. They went forward. They had decent attacks. They weren't just sitting back and sitting deep and allowing pressure on them. They just... yeah, kind of played Yoga on a little bit at their own game, not quite, obviously, but they took their chances as well. I mean, the goal comes from a throw-in, which is, I mean, it's poor to concede from a throw-in the way that they do, but it is a kind of, they've got, with Hatanaka out, who's probably the leader at the back now that Thiago Martins has gone, and with Kida not there, I don't think anyone completely knew their role from this throw-in. Yamagishi was just completely unmarked, and... yeah, he nods it on. Saneto is not alert as Wanmar runs off him. And then that leaves poor Nagato just completely exposed in the penalty area. He has to run to try and meet Wanmar. But in doing so, he has to leave Jordi Cruz unmarked. And it worked absolutely perfectly. Probably a training ground thing. Probably something they've worked on well there, Avispa. And they're fully deserved that goal. So they were, yeah. And from that point on, once Avispa are 1-0 up, they're such a difficult team to break down because, yeah, they will just sit back at that point. They've got very good defenders, whichever centre-back pairing you play. It was Mia and Nara in this game, and Maye and Nakamura can just sit in there. And they were so difficult to break down, and Yokohama didn't do that. And it looks like they got a little bit frustrated in the end, and one Brazilian forward in particular.
Oh, goodness gracious me. Yes, indeed. Well, you've rounded up the goal especially well there, Sam, for Crooks 13 minutes into the second half. And then, yes, in the 77th minute, well, what on earth has gone on? We've mentioned a couple of unsavoury incidents that have taken place across this match day. Obviously, the infighting at Gunma Osaka, the outright rage at the Kobe players towards the referee at having that last gasp goal disallowed. But yeah, taking the cake is a certain Anderson Lopez. And again, listeners, we should remind you that there's a new episode of the Tricolor Pridecast out with Stuart talking to Daniel, who, yeah, we're still trying to lure onto this podcast, so I don't know what sort of bribes Stuart was offering Daniel to get him on, but fair dues to you, Stuart, and yeah, good to hear from you, Daniel. We're looking forward to doing so one day ourselves on this particular podcast. But yeah, listen to those fellas break down the entire game, but of course this incident as well, it's... yeah, it's not right, and he deserves the book thrown at him, Sam. Daiki Mia, one of the centre-backs, as you mentioned, just, I guess, gives Anderson Lopez a bit of a nudge from behind in the 77th minute, just to make sure he knows that Mia's behind him, perhaps, or to rile him up a little bit. And, well, it's most definitely worked, as Lopez basically turns around, squares up to Mia, and point-blank spits at him, and he's finally sent off via a VAR review in the 81st minute. So goodness knows what the J-League will do in terms of a punishment here, Sam. But to say this is not on is a massive understatement. And I don't think we'll be seeing Anderson Lopez for a while.
No, it's absolutely disgusting. And in fact, it seems totally out of character. I don't really seeing Anderson Lopez get riled up or react in any sort of manner like this. So it was a very weird one. But yeah, I think he's going to be out for a fair whack of time. I think Dan Olowitz tweeted over the weekend that there's probably a precedent for a 6-game ban. So maybe that's kind of what he's facing. But yeah, it was just... yeah, it's just disgusting to turn around and spit at a fellow player. It's absolutely not on. He deserves whatever he gets for this. It was a very weird situation because we saw the push, and that's quite obvious, but nobody really knew what VAR was checking, and it was so difficult to actually spot the spit live. I absolutely didn't. It took me a few searches on Twitter to find a video just to confirm that. So again, I mean, we're crediting VAR again, but he manages to spot this, which is terrific spot from him, because I definitely didn't see it, and I'm not sure anyone else in the crowd had any idea. But yeah, it's been caught, he's been punished, he's been sent off, and yeah, let's have no more of that, please, because it's absolutely disgusting and there's no need for it.
Yeah, not on at all. And we'll see what the punishment that the J League ultimately hands down, and there might be some in-house slapping from F. Marinos as well. In fact, I'd be surprised if there wasn't. All right, but there was still plenty of action to come in the last 15 minutes or so of this game, as F. Marinos went down to 10 men, but did not give up hopes of nicking a point. And indeed, Eduardo saw a deflected drive saved by Masaaki Murakami in the 90th minute. And then as the clock struck 97, Leo Ciara side-footed against the post from inside the six-yard box after a bit of pinball wizard. And then Eduardo tried to place his shot from the rebound into the top corner, but instead fired narrowly over. And at the full-time whistle, yes, the Avispa supporters especially their players could celebrate a job very, very well done against, again, very demanding team to play against. So the Avispa players, they left it all out there on the pitch, and ultimately have deserved their win. And a bit of a bump in the road for F. Marinos that I'm sure they weren't expecting. Although, I don't know, Sam, they probably haven't been at their best for quite a while, have they? And obviously Stuart mentioned it last week. I was trying to big up their ACL campaign, but he basically went through it on a game-by-game basis and pointed out that they hadn't played especially well while making it through. So obviously since their return to league action, they'd won the first game, but then the draw away at Reds in midweek, and then this loss. So I guess things aren't all completely shipshape at F. Marinos at the moment.
Yeah, not completely. I agree with everything Stuart said about the ACL campaign. I think they picked up towards the end of it, but some of those first performances I thought were very poor. But yeah, a lot of it was put down to the rotation and the conditions there. I mean, it's very difficult. Over in Vietnam, the humidity there, it was so hard, so hot, so difficult for any player to play one game, and let alone every 3 days in those sorts of conditions. So I gave them a little bit of a pass there, and then they came back, they beat Nagoya, and they were just about the better side, I thought, in that game, and they got through. And then Shonan, I thought they eased the victory in that, so it looked like they were back to where they were. And then first half against Urawa, I thought, okay, there's no problems here. And Marinos are very much the team to beat this season. But then, yeah, that collapse in that second half, and then they go on and then don't really perform in this game either. I think they're a team that can definitely do with this international break that's coming up. I know there's an Emperor's Cup game that they're going to have to face, but yeah, they can just rotate for that game, I'm sure, and give most of their first team a decent break for a couple of weeks. I think they absolutely need it, and then that should be enough to kind of reinvigorate them, because we've all praised how well Kevin Muscat has used his squad, but obviously that's going to have a toll on you at some point. You can't just keep doing that. So they just need a break, I think. Just get through the next two games. Kyoto midweek, hopefully they can, from their point of view, they can get through that one, just get through the next two games, get to that break, and then come back fit and firing in the latter part of June.
Yes, indeed. And you're right there. I shortchanged them a victory, didn't I? Of course, yes, the win against Shonan as well, which I should have factored in there. So, yeah, they'd won the two in a row in the league before the midweek draw and the weekend loss. So, yeah, all right. So we've got three games left to go. We've got the 2-1. Two 2-1 away wins to discuss. And, Sapporo, Sam, bounced back from last week's hammering at the hands of Kashima by winning 2-1 away at Jubilo Iwata. Norimichi Yamamoto swept the host Jubilo into an 8th-minute lead, but then Sapporo had it far too easy as they equalised just before the half hour. Lucas Fernandez allowed time and space to cross from the right, and Kazuki Fukai side-footed home a volley past a static Ryuki Miura. And then in the second half, 10 minutes in, Ryota Aoki crossed from the left and Yoshiaki Komai headed in from 6 yards out. So again, unmarked, and disappointing effort from the Iwata defence. So good to see Sapporo bounce back from that hammering last week, as I said, and Iwata, their hunt for a consecutive victory in J1, it just goes on.
Yeah, I think they were fairly poor in this game, to be fair. Iwata, they were without their talisman this season, Yuto Suzuki, he didn't play. And yeah, they just kind of struggled. They started fairly well, I suppose. They got their goal, a little bit of fortune the way it bounces to Yamamoto, but yeah, he took his chance fairly well. But then they just sat back, but they sat back without really any purpose, and they weren't really engaging Sapporo, and it was quite easy for Sapporo to then create chances. I mean, Fernandez is not closed down at all for his cross, and the volley, I think, is fantastic from Fukai. I mean, I can't remember who it was, so sorry, whoever it was on Twitter, but they described that goal as just a nonchalant volley, and that was exactly what it was. It didn't look like it caused him any problems at all. No effort was required, but he just volleyed into the bottom corner. So, yeah, really good goal. But then Jubilo, little bit of a comeback. I mean, maybe it turns for Jubilo and for Sugimoto if his effort off the post at the start of the second half goes in, because nothing has got off the inside the post, kind of rolls across the goal. And yeah, just another one for him. Well, what can I do? A goal isn't coming. So it didn't for him. And that was then gave Sapporo a bit more impetus to go on. And they got their goal fairly quickly after that through Kumai. So yeah, fairly poor performance from Jubilo. Fair play to Sapporo, because they came into this game with various players out. Sugano was out, Fukumori, Miyazawa, Takamine, Ogashiwa, Kuroki, and Nakashima as well. So plenty missing for Sapporo. It was a bit of a patched up team, but then yeah, they did manage to ease to victory, I thought, in the end, with a decent performance.
Yes, indeed. Well, echoes of Gumba's win last week, then away at Kashiwa with the number of players they had missing. But yeah, I think Sapporo did it quite a bit easier than Gumba did last week at the Hitachi Dai. But yeah, disappointing defensive display from Iwata. And as you say, yeah, just again, it's not happening for Kenyu Sugimoto. I mean, I didn't mention Lukian's couple of chances in the previous game, Sam. I mean, for Fukuoka, another one of our, I can't call him a whipping boy anymore because he scored a couple of games to FC Tokyo in that 5-1 win. But yeah, Sugimoto, it's yet to happen for him. But yeah, earlier on we mentioned that Junior Santos got his goal, and yes, Noriyoshi Sakai could celebrate one as well when he again, he didn't really know too much about it, which was probably a good thing, when Mateus whipped in a cross in the 22nd minute, and Sakai didn't really have any time at all to react, but just diverted the ball into the net past Shuichi Gonda to give Grampus the lead. I mean, yes, Sakai's had some horrid luck as well in the early stages of this season, so very pleased for him. And he looked a mixture of stunned and ecstatic at the fact that he'd actually scored. So that was great for him. Then Thiago Santana equalised with just under 20 minutes to go, and it looks set to finish 1-1, Sam, before a dramatic intervention by Yuki Soma deep into second half stoppage time. A long-range pile driver caught out Shuichi Gonda at his near post to win it for Grampus. And I guess, he'll probably end up catching the highlights, but Gonda has to be pleased that Hajime Moriyasu was actually at the Lemon Gas Stadium and not at Nihon Daira to watch Gonda getting beaten at his near post so late in the game.
Yeah, it was not ideal, is it, for a goalkeeper to do that? And there are various occasions where Gonda has been beaten too easily, but the fact of the matter is there's not a great standard of goalkeeper for the Japan national squad, so it's probably quite settled in that position come what may, which is another worry that we might discuss closer to the World Cup. But I think you've got to give credit to Sommer. I mean, he takes the ball from midfield, and maybe the defence is a little open, no one really closes him down, but I don't think anyone really expects him to shoot from there either. It's not like he's famed for his long-range pile drivers, and he cutting in on his right foot as well. But yeah, he hits it very well in off the post. I mean, yeah, probably keeper should do better, but you got to give credit to him for that goal. And very nice one. Another game where Shimizu, I think, were in it, and then just it's not worked for them. And I'd like to officially remove myself from the Shimizu bandwagon, because it's not going for them. Nothing works for them. So I think if I distance myself from Shimizu, maybe that will sort things out, and they'll get a little bit of better luck. Because yeah, they've just been in so many games, but for whatever reason, they've not been able to get the goals that at the right times when they've been on top in games. Things just haven't quite gone for them. And yeah, they just end up conceding late goals as well. So yeah, I'll leave you to it, Shimizu, and hopefully you do better without me.
Yeah, I mean, it does just seem to be a weekly thing, doesn't it? Yeah, they're close, but they either get pegged back at the death, or in the case of Saturday, their 1 point vanishes at the death. And fair dues to Solma, but I think he took everybody by surprise, and most especially Gonda with his long range effort to see Grampus win a second straight game for the first time this season, as they're now up into 13th in the table. All right then, so the final game, 0-0 at Ajinomoto Stadium, when FC Tokyo hosted Kashiwa. These two teams came in to the match day inside the top four in the case of Reysol, and inside, I think Tokyo was seventh maybe at kickoff, Sam, I can't remember, but definitely in the top half, where they remain of course. But both teams had been struggling in recent weeks. Tokyo had won just once in their last seven league games coming into this one, while Reysol hadn't fared much better, winning just one of their last six. And, well, you can tack one more game on to each team's records after Saturday afternoon. But basically, Sam, as a Tokyo supporter, I'm indebted to VAR for disallowing Kashiwa's goal, in inverted commas, that they had scored in the 90th minute. It looked like it was the Tosu game all over again, when a 0-0 vanished at the death. But a combination of Kaito Mori and Takumi Kamijima saw the ball bundled into the net. But ultimately, after checking the replay a number of times, VAR determined that the ball had gone in off Kamijima's hand, and eventually the goal was correctly disallowed.
Yep, very good again from VAR. Full credit to them. I think it was flicked on. There was a couple of ricochets, and I think it might hit Mori's knee first and then hit Kamijima's arm. I don't think he knows anything about it, and he just wheels away because he thinks he scored. But it's another good decision. He has to be ruled out. So full credit to them. They got that decision right. And I apologize to every Tokyo or Kashiwa supporter for trying to put this as game of the week last week. I cursed that to an obvious 0-0 draw, and that's how it was. It was a fairly even game, I'd say. Both goalkeepers made good saves. Sasaki coming in for Kim, he did well to save from Nagai. I think there was a good save from Slovic to deny Hosoya. It was probably the best two chances. And then both sides hit the woodwork. Savio with a long-range free kick, and the Adelton shot that you mentioned earlier off the crossbar. So I think 0-0 was probably the exact right result for this game. And it's just two teams that they're still in reasonable positions, but no one would be shouting about their recent form. And there's definitely work to do for both of these sides.
Chances here and there in spurts at either end. But it wasn't a great game. And it's just one of those where the other team scores and you're just hopeful that VAR is going to intervene. And it took a number of replays for me to notice the fact that the ball had skimmed in off Kamijima's arm. So ultimately thankful for that. But just overall, as I said last week in Maxi's moan, not happy at all with the way that that Tokyo are traveling, and number of players not performing especially well. And I think you're in trouble if Takuya Aoki is one of your better players, and I think he was on Saturday. And it appears that Dialton is the only route to goal, with Diego Oliveira severely out of form, and again Leandro missing for the past couple of games. So we'll wait and see. Obviously it could have been a lot rosier if Shuto Abe had have netted in the first couple of minutes when he was sent through by Adalton, but it wasn't to be, and I guess that set the tone for the rest of the afternoon. Savio hitting the bar with his free kick was an impressive effort, and Adalton's 25 yard shot that rebounded 25 yards off the crossbar was impressive as well. But as you say, Sam, I think 0-0 was just about right. And with that, then, that's the end of all nine J1 match day 14 games. And we'll look ahead to Wednesday then. As we mentioned a couple of times, a full round of fixtures, match day 15 taking place, with the eight games kicking off at 7 o'clock, and just Nagoya hosting Fukuoka at 7:30. So that's to say that's going to keep you busy is obviously a huge understatement, Sam. Leaders Kawasaki host now second from bottom Shonan in a Kanagawa derby. And, well, Kashima versus Tosu also looks an interesting clash of top six clubs. And then over the weekend, we approached the halfway point of the season in match day 16. Well, Sam, yeah, I'd say slim pickings in trying to identify a marquee matchup for Sam's pick of the weekend, and especially considering our track record over the past couple of weeks, we probably should keep to ourselves. But anyway, over the course of these two match days, I'll be watching Kyoto with interest. I wouldn't say that either of their games are pick of the round, but I mean, they've got two huge tests as they face the Kanagawa powerhouses. It's F. Marino's away on Wednesday and then Frontale at home on Sunday. So, they look interesting games to me. What about you for a pick of the weekend?
Well, I'll pick a team to follow as well. I'll go with that. I think that's an interesting way to look at it. And I'll go with Reds, actually, with two difficult-looking away games, because obviously they're just on that brink, just outside the relegation places. They just, you know, that run of draws. And Cerezo Osaka away on Wednesday is not an easy result. They played very well, didn't they, against Gamba at the weekend. So that's a difficult one for them to go to. And then Avispa on Saturday, where Avispa have shown that they can beat the better teams. They did so very well against Marinos. So yeah, two really difficult games for Reds. If that doesn't go well, they could see down there with Kobe as we go into this break. But two wins obviously gets them nicely into mid-table and they can breathe a little bit easier. But yeah, I think these are two critical games for Reds. So yeah, I'll be interested to follow their fortunes this week.
Yeah, very good shout then. So yeah, that Reds visiting Fukuoka is one of the two games on Saturday. The other is Hiroshima hosting Nagoya, who come in on the back of two straight wins. So that's, could be an interesting one as well. And then, yeah, the other seven games are all on Sunday and range in time from, Kobe Sapporo kicking is off at 1 o'clock, 1:05 rather, to be precise, all the way down to 5 p.m. when Tosu host Gamba Osaka, who will hopefully be closer to full strength after their recent struggles with personnel due to COVID. But we hope that Gen Shoji and Leandro Pereira have patched things up on the training ground in the meantime. And first things first, they're both able to take part on Wednesday before transpires on Sunday. All right, so we will leave it there, I think, Sam. Yes, the national team squad was unveiled by Mr. Moriyasu in the past few days, but apart from Hiroki Ito getting his first call up, there wasn't really too many other massive talking points, so I guess we can park that until closer to the actual friendlies being played, as of course we still have a J1 to discuss next week, and then hopefully putting together a midway point of the season special as we get there close to that after the next weekend's match day 16. So mate, I think we'll leave it there for now, and we'll reconvene next week. Hopefully the patrons can look out for something from you on Wednesday or in the early hours of Thursday Japan time.
Yeah, I will do my best. Nine games all kicking off pretty much at the same time is going to be difficult. But yeah, pen and paper will be ready, and I've got at least three screens I can try and put together to try and watch everything at the same time. So yeah, I'll do my best to be as quick as possible sending that out on Wednesday evening.
Brilliant stuff then. All right, so speaking of Patreon, I'd like to give a big shout out to our three newest patrons, R-Om, Tom and Bobby, for coming on board. Absolutely terrific to have you with us, guys. If you'd like to get involved and support the J-Talk podcast on Patreon for as little as $1 a month, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. So yeah, once again, thanks to all our patrons and thanks to you for listening wherever you are. So Sam will be back to review match day 15 in the week for our patrons, and then we'll be back to cover match day 16 in next week's podcast at the regularly scheduled time. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
This week in VAR.
the J Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.